From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last weekend in Rochester when demonstrators supporting the Black Lives Matter movement organized downtown. Their demonstration eventually led to some confrontations with Rochester police, who arrested more than 70 people. Police instructed protesters to stop blocking the streets, and at various times, officers moved into the crowds to make arrests. Well, this week, city leadership has reflected on the tense situation. Yesterday, leaders of BLACK, B-L-A-C-K, Building Leadership and Community Knowledge, said that Rochester police have worked with them before and should have known that there was no violent intention and no need to escalate the situation with what they call riot gear and dozens of arrests. But police say they refrained from using pepper spray, tear gas, and simply wanted to keep the streets clear and safe. This hour, Rochester's police chief, Michael Simonelli, is my guest. And I've said it before, I will say it again. Chief Simonelli has been one of the most accessible leaders I have ever covered. I suspect it's not his favorite conversation to have. I recently spoke to several local religious leaders who told me multiple times the chief is proactively reached out to their organizations just to make sure things are okay, particularly after national events and tragedies, working on building stronger relationships. And the question now is, how can we all move forward together, particularly after this past weekend? So Chief Michael Simonelli, thank you as always for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Also here is Rochester Police Commander Joseph Morabito. Commander, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you very much.
And I want to mention to our listeners, we're on WXXI News' Facebook Live, so you can follow along with us on WXXI News' Facebook page through Facebook Live. Chief, just real briefly, I know you wanted to bring the commander for a reason. Why don't you, for us and for the listeners, kind of sketch out where you both were this past weekend during the demonstrations?
Sure. We had a command post in the sixth floor of the public safety building where I spent the my time during the event. Commander Joe Morabito was what I'll refer to as a field commander. So he was actually on site at Easton Alexander directing the operation in the field. So I would bring a perspective about what happened in the command post, the decision making at that level, and Commander Morabito can discuss his personal observations and judgments in the field.
Okay, we've also invited Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren to join the program. City Hall has not responded to multiple requests this week on that, but we hope that we will be able to talk to her very soon. Let's talk about what happened. You said, from what I saw earlier this week, correct me if I'm wrong, you said, I think a couple days ago, there's a lot of video to work through. You hadn't seen it all at that point, but at that time, you hadn't seen anything that you found objectionable on behalf of your officers. Is that still the case?
Yeah. Let me emphasize, I have seen a fair amount of video. There is much more out there that I have not personally observed yet. I have members of the staff that are trying to get through video from whatever source that we can locate it. You know, at this point, again, that the fundamental facts that we've put out, I haven't seen anything to contradict that. Now, I do need to say, though, that, you know, when I look at a video from a police chief's perspective and how officers conducted themselves, you know, from a training and policy perspective, I'm looking at it from a different perspective than maybe a member of the public. I've said right from the beginning, from the first press conference we did, I think it was around 2:30 or 2:45 a.m. the next morning, that I think overall there was a high degree of professionalism and restraint that were shown by the officers. But I also said, you know, there were multiple individual interactions that we're trying to work through. You know, questions have come up about the injuries. At that point, that morning, we had no reports of any injuries beyond the some minor scrapes and scratches, which I talked about. I know people are now talking about other individuals being injured. And again, I encourage anyone to come forward that believes that they were injured as a result of any police action that night, we'd like to talk to you. But the fundamental facts, as we have stated them at this point, I haven't seen anything to, you know, to contradict that. Now, having said that, if, you know, we are going to continue to look at everything, and if we find something, we will follow up on it.
Okay. Video shows your officers wearing what we might call riot gear. I think you would call protective gear.
Correct.
Okay, during the daylight hours. And there are questions about when that call was made. Some have said it was only after someone threw a rock at officers. Others have wondered if you decided that that was the gear you were going to use from the start and whose call it was. So what's the answer to that?
Okay, let me step through that. First of all, I want to emphasize we call it protective gear because its purpose is to protect the officers. And not only is it appropriate to protect the officers, it by having the protective gear, it sometimes can lessen the likelihood or the need for a higher level of force because the officers have a higher level of protection, and we can, you know, modify our tactics accordingly. Now, in this particular case, this was extensively covered by the media, there's quite a bit of video. We had the protective gear in reserve. We typically start with what we call the uniform of the day, which is a standard police uniform. That's how we started. At some point, we did have the equipment staged, which is what we normally do. Frankly, it's what we've done in prior protests and demonstrations. And when there was no need to take it out, we didn't. In this particular case, the protest went for some time. We closed down streets. We facilitated the march. There was no protective gear. At Woodbury, next to Strong Museum, a situation occurred, and we'll be getting more out on this later, where officers exited their car without protective gear in regular uniform and got backed up against their cars by a fairly large group. At that point, the sergeant on the scene, who had the authority to do that, made a decision to have his officers put their helmets on. So that's the first time any of the gear came out.
Do you know what time that was?
I don't have an exact time, but we will be putting that together.
Okay. And so that was the time. And at that point, did everyone who was out, I think more than 100 officers, go with the protective gear?
No, absolutely not. What happened at that point, we had the officers stay in place, and we didn't ask them to try to force their way out of that situation. Then we had what we called mobile field force units that are specially trained and equipped to deal with crowd situations. We had them stay in place for approximately 15 minutes to 20 minutes, and they waited. We had the specially equipped officers at that point. They did enter that location. They moved the officers without the protective gear to the rear, and there is quite a bit of video that I've seen on this. They stood in a line to keep the group contained. And again, there was no action by any officers. There was one disorderly conduct arrest made there, but beyond that, the officers stood as they were trained in a line and just held that line. As they actually, at one point, there were protesters on three sides of them, which, you know, from our training perspective, is not a good thing. But again, you can see that's the first time that protective gear came out. Later at Easton Alexander, we had actually started demobilizing. Because the march had ended at Liberty Pole, and we had been informed that they planned to stay there overnight, and we had made a decision to let them stay there, we started demobilizing. Later on, the march started again, and when we actually moved in to make arrest at Easton Alexander, a lot of officers had to be called back in, and at that point, there were officers wearing helmets, protective helmets and face shields. But even then, most of them did not even have the rest of the protective gear on.
All right, so one of the pieces of video that's been shared a lot is the officers in a line marching and saying, move back, move back.
Right.
And they are wearing the gear, and it is during the daylight hours.
Right.
That's what you were describing. Where was that, Chief? Because you said that wasn't all 100-plus at that time wearing it?
No, and I'm just hesitant to answer until I've looked at so much video.
I understand the point.
But that could have been Woodbury. Again, if you look at the video from Easton Alexander, most of the officers will be wearing their the protective helmets and the face shields, but you don't see the other protective gear. And the other thing I want to say, too, is let's bear in mind, this is protective gear. It is basically padding and hard shell plastic to protect the officers that are from getting projectiles thrown.
Okay. I'm directing most of the questions to Rochester Police Chief Michael Simonelli's here. If at any point, Commander Morabito, you can add, certainly feel free to jump in. I don't want you to feel left out of this conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate jumping in. But as you can see, the chief has a total grasp of the situation and is clearly answering
questions.
So no need to jump in, but I obviously will be happy to jump in if there's something to clarify.
All right. Again, thanks for being here. I'm working through my questions, listeners, but if you have any questions for Police Chief Simonelli and Commander Morabito, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. 263-9994. On Twitter, Jenna was asking, this is a demonstration that was not impromptu, so you had at least in advance. I don't know how far in advance you knew it was
sure.
going to happen, but you knew it was going to happen.
Right.
Were you in touch with the people who were organizing it in advance? She's essentially saying, how come there didn't seem to be more cooperation and working together between the protest movement and the police?
Right. I will say this: we did have advance notice, and anytime we have a situation like this, we attempt to reach out. In this particular case, the mayor had conversations with people involved, and I'm going to let her speak for her conversations. Based on what she was told, that the plan was to do what they've done in the past, which is march, mm-hmm. maybe obstruct intersections at certain intervals, but to continue marching. What we've done in the past, really since Ferguson, is we have not tried to enforce the law. We have actually facilitated the protest with or without a permit and let people express their opinion and do that. We, even up until that day, we tried to reach out. President Mike Mazza, the Locust Club, had tried to reach out to certain individuals involved. We tried to facilitate some conversations. So I can tell you absolutely, anytime that we're aware of any type of plan for a protest or a demonstration, we always would rather sit down, talk it through, and try to work out the ground rules that will allow the protesters to express their views in a safe way. And if everybody understands it, I agree with the individual that asked that question, it would be better for us to sit down and talk in advance.
All right, just to be clear then, if the mayor was having that conversation, did you feel it wasn't your place at that point? I mean, could you have had that conversation?
Oh, no, not at all. What I was pointing out that there were, you know, collectively on the part of the city administration, we were trying to communicate, you know, even up until the, you know, when the crowd started gathering at Liberty Pole, we were still trying to reach out and trying to set up a meeting between the organizers so that we could have a better understanding of what they wanted to do.
Okay. Because if you look across the country, there were demonstrations in other cities, I think around a dozen cities.
Correct.
This past weekend. Rochester was one of them. And a lot of people have been pointing to a city like Memphis, where the interim police director, Michael Rawlings, he saw that the demonstrators were going to go downtown and they were going to block traffic in Memphis. But instead of saying that they couldn't do that, he said essentially, okay, if you're going to shut down the streets, I'm going to go with you. Thousands of people demonstrated. They did shut down traffic. There was not one single arrest in Memphis. And I want to read an editorial from the Memphis Commercial Appeal about that, the newspaper in Memphis. Quote, "We salute Rawlings for keeping a lid on things. That resulted in a massive protest that resulted in zero arrests. Leaders of groups participating in the protest also deserve credit for keeping things in check, even when it seemed some participants were intent on ratcheting things up. But Rawlings' willingness to talk with protesters and at times walk arm in arm with them kept things calm, with his officers displaying what some called remarkable restraint, even when marchers turned onto a main bridge. Yes, blocking the bridge was illegal, and police would have been justified in arresting anyone who refused to leave the bridge. Rawlings, however, rightly surmised that such a move would have sparked resistance that could have resulted in chaos. So authorities let the protesters have their demonstration before the crowd began to thin out." End quote. And then, so we look at that, and then we look at the East End, and we say, okay, people were sitting in East Avenue, so what? Why not, you know, why do you have to go in and take them out of the street?
Okay, well, there are a number of decisions, a number of reasons into that decision, and I am going to let Commander Morabito jump in here because there were continual attempts on his part to directly communicate. First of all, I do want to point out, we as we have in the past, we have let marchers go in the street illegally, shut down intersections, block the transit center, do any number of things, and we intended to do that again, and had it stated that we would have. Part of the problem was, and this is a very, very important point, and I'm going to let Commander Morabito go into some detail because he was right on the scene. There were several factors we had to take into account. First of all, the number of police resources it was tying up. It was a hot Friday night. We got to the point where we could not respond to routine calls. We backed up on emergency calls. We had to call for help from a number of area police departments who I'm grateful, did come forward and help us. So that was one part of the decision. The other part, the situation there started turning into a confrontational situation with some of the protesters and other people in the area. And I'm going to turn it over to Commander Morabito at this point.
Okay, Commander?
Yeah, just to back up a little bit, too, is there was numerous attempts at Liberty Pole when this first started around 4 p.m., 3:30, somewhere in that range, to speak to some of the organizers. We had multiple people identify themselves as organizers, so that was one of our problems. We had multiple groups at Liberty Pole. We marched with them, if you will. We provided protection for the group to march all over the city of Rochester, stop and block intersections for almost a couple hours, tying up a number of resources, and we just protected their march and allowed them to do that. Also stopping at Woodbury, the situation we've already talked about, and then we ended up back at the Liberty Pole where we assumed they were going to maintain. Then, again, going forward to East and Alexander, we, again, did the same thing. We protected the folks in the middle of the street. We put many, many officers out to protect the routes in and out, the traffic. It's a very busy intersection, as you know, for quite a bit of time. I spoke to a number of people there during the event, and it was extremely clear. Folks discussed that they were there to be arrested. Certain number of people wanted to be arrested. There was a discussion about certain folks, if they're up in the front of the line, they plan to be arrested. They're not leaving. There was chance to the fact they were going to shut it down and stay all night. They were prepared to stay all night. They were getting food and water delivered to the intersection. So there was a definite clear indication they were there for the long haul. So some of the factors that the chief just mentioned about resources and calls backing up and our inability to provide police services to the rest of the city were factors. Also, another real important point that hasn't been covered much is we had a flashpoint at one point in time with some folks attending some of the establishments there and some folks in the crowd where we nearly had a large-scale fight, and I really thought at that point in time it could have erupted into a riotous situation, a non-peaceful situation.
Where was that, Commander?
It was right at East and Alexander over by the Murphy's Law side of the street, if you will.
Because at this point, I should mention, earlier this week we heard from a gentleman named Chris Thompson. He's a local engineer. He was down there at the time. He was in that exact area. He said there were some patrons, bar patrons, who were shouting at the protesters, even hurling some racial epithets.
Yes,
absolutely. I was in the middle of one of those incidents, and actually I was able to get between them and some other officers joined me as well to get the folks to go back to the street and stay in the street, and we were successful. But I really thought at that moment was potential we could lose that intersection and that, you know, protest.
But did you arrest anybody from the bars? Did you arrest only protesters? Because Chris, his feeling was you were not going after anybody but protesters when people from the bars were agitated.
That's totally untrue.
Okay.
We arrested a number of folks that were bar patrons, not necessarily there with the group. Again, another thing to keep in mind, it was very fluid. There's people walking in and out of this crowd. One minute they're in the middle of the street, and next minute they're on the sidewalk, and one minute they walk in the bar, and then they come back out of the bar. So it wasn't a clear, nobody there wears a sign, I'm a protester, I'm a bar patron. You don't have that clear delineation there. But I can assure you that probably somewhere in the range of 10 folks or more were not involved in the protest. They were involved with the bar, neighborhood folks, people that came up and didn't heed the same warnings that we gave to everybody else.
Okay. A caller off air, just with a question on the situations down there, and he says, during peaceful times, when they weren't moving the line, officers seemed to be targeting peaceful black people. He says, the darker the skin, the more likely they were to be targeted. Fair or unfair?
Well, again, from my perspective, from a macro level, I don't see any evidence of that, and I'm going to let Commander Morbido speak because he was physically there. Just looking at the arrest statistics, it seems to me the arrest was focused on conduct and not race, because the majority of people arrested were not African American. Now, again, I've said this right from the beginning. You look at this on a large scale, and the result and the outcome, it's made up of multiple interactions and, dialogue between various officers and people that were out there. So, as I said from the beginning, if we see any evidence of anything improper for any reason, we will deal with it. But at this point, that's a narrative that's going around. And at this point, and I accept that may be someone's perception, but at least the arrest statistics do not bear that out.
Okay. And before we move to some listener questions as well, just following up, because I think a lot of people who have already written into the show this morning in anticipation of this interview have essentially asked, did you need the gear and maybe some of the move back marching, the formations? It made it feel confrontational to people who didn't want to be violent. And I think in general what they're feeling is, could you have done something like what Dallas did? The night five Dallas officers were murdered. I mean, everybody agrees, one of the worst tragedies we can imagine. You saw the Dallas Police Department not only facilitating the demonstration, but at times, arm in arm with the protesters, they were tweeting pictures, standing with the protesters. Mm-hmm. It felt more supportive to some than what felt almost instantly confrontational.
Right.
Chief, do you look at what you did and do you think the next time this happens, can we be a little bit more, not hands off, but can it be less confrontational?
Well, first of all, and I'm going to address this head on. Again, that really is a false narrative about what happened, because until things got confrontational with a number of the protests, I'm not saying all, that's exactly what we did. The same way we've handled every other protest where we facilitated them, we blocked traffic. Even though it was very difficult, they changing routes often, that's exactly what we did. And so the first time the protective gear came on was when a situation happened on Woodbury Street. And at that point, the sergeant decided to have his officers put their helmets on. And again, I don't know that I'm going to make an apology for that. Now, it was based on our assessment of the situation. It did not come out in the first instance, and had protesters not engaged in certain conduct, it wouldn't have come out. And so again, I think I understand people have a right to disagree with what we did and the way we handled it. Certainly, I'm accountable for the judgments I made, and in the end, I'm here to explain them. But I think that you know, creating this false narrative is not helping the dialogue. The other thing I'm going to point out that you know, people want to compare to other cities. You're not mentioning a number of other cities where the police reacted in a much more forceful way.
Baton Rouge, with, others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I'm not, you know, so again, we tried to tailor what we did. I'm disappointed that this got to a point where we decided to make arrests. I said right from the first press conference, after weighing all the factors, I use the word reluctantly. I very, very reluctantly gave the go-ahead to give some final warnings and start making an arrest. And if there's, at the next protest, we will reach out and try to, you know, work with them. And if they work with us, it won't happen.
Okay. Mayor Warren has said that she felt... number one, when everything was sort of going on this past weekend, she didn't have a direct cell phone for some of the people who were organizing. And in lieu of that, she felt like her presence, if she went down there, might have made things even more volatile. That's why she wasn't there. A lot of people were saying, where's the mayor? Were you in touch with her, and did you think she should have been down there?
At that point, I asked her not to go down there, because at that point, the information I got from Commander Morabito about the confrontations that were occurring, my first one concern was I wanted to be able to ensure her safety. And secondly, at that point, I did not feel her presence there would have been helpful. So, you know, I'll take the hit for that. That was my request.
Okay. Generally speaking, Chief, you know, you've had a chance now to see how the Black Lives Matter movement has tried to demonstrate, tried to move what they see as progress across the country.
Sure.
How do you feel about the movement?
Well, it's very important. I mean, look, this is probably, I told this to my command staff earlier, this issue of the relationship between law enforcement and the community it serves is probably the most important domestic issue in this country right now. And I think we have to meet it head on. And I am hopeful that we can use this incident as maybe a springboard to have a better dialogue and to reach out to each other. And, you know, since I've been chief, we've been making a lot of effort to reach out to different groups. There's no group or no individual that we won't sit down and talk to and try to come to a better place.
Got an email this morning in advance of this interview from a listener named Mark, who had a lot of praise for you as the chief and your staff. But he also wanted to know how you feel about sort of the state of whether there are disparities. And Mark sent me an email with a video clip. It's Senator Tim Scott. He is an African-American senator, and he is from South Carolina. And yesterday he spoke about, remember, he is a Republican senator.
Right.
He's black. And he talked about, even since he was elected going to Washington, how he feels police there have mistreated him just because he's black. And I want to listen to just some of what Senator Scott had to say.
I've been stopped 7 times by law enforcement officers. Not 4, not 5, not 6, but 7 times in 1 year as an elected official. Was I speeding sometimes? Sure. But the vast majority of the time, I was pulled over for nothing more than driving a new car in the wrong neighborhood or some other reason just as trivial.
That's Senator Tim Scott. He spoke for a number of minutes. That was just one section
right.
from that. And so what Mark is saying is he wants to know if you had heard that. And in general, do you think black people are treated differently than white people by police in this country?
Well, this first of all, I can't comment on the experience that Senator Scott had. I did see at least some of his interviews on the media coverage. I will say this, that what we are striving for in this city is for people to feel a sense of equality, a sense of that everybody's treated equitably. And this is what we're shooting for. This is why we reorganized the department. This is why we reorganized from large patrol areas into smaller beats. This is why we're doing programs like Clergy on Patrol. This is why we go to community meetings. I think the first step is we have to get to know each other as individuals. We want to see each other as people. And this is something essential. The first step in trust is communication. So, you know, that's the essential thing we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, we're in Rochester, New York. We're not on Mars. And by that, I mean we are subject to the same issues that are going on all over the country here. But I can tell you that Most of the police officers here are honorable. They serve this community. They serve it well. And, you know, I think if people will give us a chance to sit down and talk with us and we get to know each other better, I think we can move forward.
Cleveland Browns running back Isaiah Crowell posted a drawing on his social media accounts showing a man cutting the throat of a police officer. He has apologized after a huge outcry. I don't know anyone who thinks what he did wasn't disgusting. Cleveland Police Patrolmen's Association President Steve Loomis threatened to have his officers boycott working Browns games unless Crowell met certain conditions, and apparently they've worked out an agreement there. In Minnesota, you had players from the Minnesota Lynx women's basketball team wear warm-up shirts that said, quote, "Change starts with us, justice and accountability" on the front, and on the back of the shirts it featured the names Castile and Sterling and the Dallas Police Department shield, and at the bottom it said, "Black Lives Matter." Well, four off-duty Minneapolis police officers who were working security for Saturday's Lynx game walked off their posts at the Target Center in response to the player's stance, and Lieutenant Bob Kroll, president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, commended the officers for walking off the job. I've heard listeners who want to know, should we be worried that police are not going to serve if they don't like political statements?
Well, first of all, let me say this. If anybody in Rochester, you know, rather than doing something like that, putting post, I did not see that drawing that you mentioned.
It was as awful as it's. It's worse.
Okay,
well, it is awful.
What I want to say is this: we can't surrender to hate. That's just putting up walls. And I say we will, rather than doing that, first of all, say in the city of Rochester, let's sit down and talk and let's try to get to know each other as human beings. Now, to answer your question, I have a high degree of confidence in this police department. One of the issues that's been going around the country is this potential issue of depolicing. I don't see that happening here. These officers are out there being proactive, trying to protect this community, take illegal guns off the street, to be there to put themselves in harm's way to protect the people of this city. So I'm very, very confident, and I trust these police officers will continue to do that.
All right, let me get Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, hi. How you doing, Alex?
Good.
Evan. Just a couple of things I want to speak on. I happened to, lucky or unluckily, be at Wall Street Grill at the beginning of the march and everything. I did see some of the epithets thrown at the protesters by the bar patron. Now there was no doubt who was who, and from what I could see, number one, it seemed like all the attention was directed at the protesters, and no one ever turned to any of the bar, from my perspective, when I was there. No officer ever said to any of the bar patrons, why are you doing this? Why are you yeah. causing issues? They ignored them. That's one thing. Number two, to call this illegal bothers me, because if I'm getting a license to have a parade is one thing, but protest in itself, they're not looking for a license to protest. So to call it illegal is to put them and to minimize them.
But Rich, it technically is, right? I mean, you can't stand in the middle of the street.
I'm not arguing about technicality. I'm arguing about perception that you are putting out there that these people are doing something basically wrong because they did not get a permit to have a parade. This was not a parade. I'm not talking about technicality. So I think using language like illegal, that's the problem I have. But then again, I understand that. But that technicality is also sort of provocative. But just to touch on a couple more things. The Isaiah Crowell thing was absolutely stupid.
Yeah.
Now, what the Minneapolis Lynx did was as conciliatory as you can. And listening to someone talk about it, they made a great point. Police, security, whatever, you are there to protect people, not because they agree with you, because that's your job to protect and serve.
Rich, I've got to jump in only because we got a lot of people want to weigh in, and the point you're making is a strong one, but you heard Chief Simonelli is not disagreeing with you.
I agree with that.
Chief Simonelli is not supporting the idea of depolicing. even if you don't like the message there. So I just want to jump in there. Let's work backwards on the question of calling it an illegal protest,
yeah,
Chief.
Let me address that, and then I'm going to turn it over to Commander Morabito on the issue of the protesters. The point I was making, and if it didn't come across clear, let me make it clear, that we made a decision, I refer to it as illegal, that we disregarded the option of trying to enforce the law so that we could support the ability of these individuals to have the protest. If you perceived it that I was trying to demonize the protest, it was not my purpose, but it was in the context of responding to the question about what might have happened in other cities that we took the same approach. In the editorial you read, it referred to the conduct of the protesters in Memphis being illegal and the police chose not to enforce. And the point I was making is we did exactly the same thing here in Rochester. And I'm going to turn it over to Commander Morabito about the point about the protesters versus the bar patrons.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of points there is and our caller maybe didn't see this, but I spoke to a number of the management and our officers spoke to a number of the management at the various bars, you know, making sure that we set ground rules and we encouraged folks to either be in the bar or leave, one or the other. And we did that with many people. There was a couple of flashpoints, and I described it earlier, where there was folks voicing their opinion, just like the folks in the middle of East Alexander were voicing their opinion. So we had both of those sides saying what they felt. And again, the key was not to let that escalate from where we were to what it could have possibly been. But we did, and I did myself personally speak to a number of the folks there. And actually at the City Grill that you were attending, I spoke to the management there several times.
Okay. Before I get back to your phone calls, let's take the only break of the hour. We'll come back to your calls and more questions for Rochester Police Chief Michael Simonelli. And Commander Joe Morabito is here as well, talking about the events of the past weekend, right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, first hour is Unleashed the Pet Show. It's your chance to weigh in with questions or comments about your animals, and a local veterinarian always in studio during that hour, helping you out with your questions about your animals. Then second hour, we're talking about diversity in the local theater scene and how arts companies and theater companies can make sure everyone is represented. That's Friday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A reminder, you can watch and listen to this hour on Facebook Live, WXXI News' Facebook page. We have a Facebook Live feed there. I'm in studio with Rochester Police Chief Michael Simonelli, and Commander Morabito is here as well. And on Twitter, Diane says, do leaders of protest groups take accountability for taunting bad behavior of some marchers as police review what they did wrong as well? Diane, before I let the police respond to whether they were taunted, because a couple people, George also on Twitter says, were there any taunts directed against the officer, such as officer down or wanting dead cops and the like? Before I let our guests respond to that, I will just mention, we don't have someone from BLACK in studio, but we had invited them earlier this week. They had a news conference yesterday. You can see the full news conference at WXXINews.org. And we've reached out to City Hall as well. And as soon as we can organize a conversation with Mayor Warren, we're going to be pleased to do that. But we're certainly not trying to separate any voices. That's why the phone lines are open. We're going to get back to your phone calls. So let me ask both of our guests then. Were you taunted? Were there calls for dead officers, et cetera? That's what George wants to know on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. There were calls for, and I don't know if individually someone said we want the cops dead, but there were a number of confrontational statements made by the group. Some was a group chant about the anti-police sentiment. And there was also a couple times when I myself was on the other side of the line where gentlemen were calling me names and taunting me and telling me different things that I should or shouldn't do. And it was definitely confrontational, but for the most part, our officers, 99% of the time, were professional. There was no back and forth. They were trying to engage us in these kind of conversations, and we allowed them, again, the police officers allowed them to protest, and we protected them while they protested and called us names.
Okay. Andy in Rochester is next up on the phones. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi. Yeah. Good. Great show. And I just want to make a comment or two. And I was at the protest. I'm a white person. I left at 9 o'clock, so I never saw any of the stuff on East and Alexander. But I was in the beginning of the protest where, you know, we were in the streets. And I want to say this: I have the utmost respect for the Rochester Police Department. Saying that, I was very surprised. I didn't know we were going to be marching. I've been on protest a lot in my life, but I was surprised we were be able to walk around the streets the way we were. And I thought that was all handled really well. And I'm an observer, and I like to take photos also. Well, when we got over by the Strong Museum there, to me, that seemed to be where things changed a little bit. I had stepped back to take some photos, and then that's when I saw the riot police come out from the parking lot behind the Strong Museum. And that's where everything changed, the tone of the whole thing. I didn't, you know, I know there's some bad apples, maybe were saying things on the protester sites, like yelling things to the cops. But you guys are professional, and you don't let that bother you. But when the riot police came, it was surreal. It was like stormtroopers coming, you know, from Star Wars. And to me, that's where everything changed. And to be honest, I'm against all violence. That's when I decided, and I had a friend who's a little older than me. I said, listen, let's leave. I don't like this. And then one additional thought, outside of the protesters, there were other people there, in particular one guy who had a badge on with black tape over it, I think to mourn the police officers in Dallas. And it turns out he wasn't even a policeman. He was a military cop years ago in the Army, and he was not helping anything at all. And there's a few other people yelling things to the protesters. But overall, I thought you guys did a great job, but there's got to be a different way than bringing the riot police out. Well, I feel like that changed the tenor or the tone of the whole thing.
All right, Andy, thank you for the phone call. And let me just add before they respond to that, I had a number of people say that it felt like a self-fulfilling prophecy, that when you dress for that kind of occasion, it almost automatically ratchets up the tension and it feels more confrontational. Andy obviously feels that way. He had a lot of praise for the work that you did, but he felt like that changed things. Chief?
Yeah, and I'm just going to respond to that again. The officers did not don that gear until there was a need to do it based on the circumstances. Again, I do not regret that decision. Because,
would it have been a mistake to start the day wearing that kind of gear?
Absolutely, and okay. We didn't. And if this gentleman has been at prior protests here, as he alluded to, then he knows that it's been several, at least since I've been chief, I can say that that's the first time that gear has been used. And I'm just going to ask people, we are going to be getting some more detailed information out about what happened at Woodbury. And I'm just going to ask just people to just hold your judgment. We'll get the facts out. We're still going through video from that location and putting things together. And then, you know, in the end, you know, I'll respect people's disagreement with me if that's what they believe. But again, I'm just going to ask people to bear in mind, and I've said this several times, We tried to fulfill our obligation to allow these people to protest, but I also have an obligation to the police officers and their families and their loved ones that I'm going to allow them to protect themselves to the extent that they can.
Commander Morabito?
Yeah, and if I could jump in here, there's things that a number of people are not talking about. There were approximately 8 or 9 officers trying to hold back a crowd of a couple 300. A number of those folks in that crowd were aggressive, tried to push through our officers that were pushed up against their vehicles. We can't eliminate that there was those things that could happen.
This is what happened at Woodbury?
This is Woodbury I'm talking about. And that stuff is not mentioned. And don't get me wrong, there was a mixture of groups in there, not just Black Lives Matter folks. Different organizations, some more aggressive, some less aggressive. Some wanted to be peaceful, some wanted to agitate. And we have to make sure we take all the steps to protect our officers, number one. Number two is to ensure that it doesn't get out of control, because we would be on the other side of the coin if we didn't take protective measures and steps to stop this. If it totally got out of hand, we would be having a whole different conversation that we didn't do anything. And we let people close down intersections and do things that were illegal. Why did we let them do that? That's the other side of the coin. It's not really coming out.
A listener on Twitter wants to know, would the police response have been the same without hostile bar patrons in that East End area?
Well, I'll just say this. We had, the situation is what it is. We had to play the hand we were dealt. I do think, as Commander Morabito explained, the fact that these confrontations were occurring were a significant factor in us trying to make a decision on how to handle it. So if you take that away, it is possible we could have gone longer, you know, or maybe even avoided it altogether. But, you know, there were still other issues, the police resources, our inability to protect the rest of the city. But that issue, I think, was at least one significant factor.
Okay. Listener, off air, you might have missed earlier, Chief Simonelli said that you asked Mayor Warren at one point in the evening, do not come down here, for the sake of her safety, correct?
Well, we did not feel we had sufficient control of the situation. And at that point, I asked her that not to come down.
Okay, so for the people who've been saying the last couple of days, where was the mayor? Chief is saying he asked her not to come down in those moments. And a woman off air, withholding her name, just wants to know, would you have told a male mayor not to go down as well?
No, that has nothing to do with it. I mean, no.
It was not a gender-based call.
No, no, no. It was based on the assessment of the situation, the number of police resources we had, and the information I had from the scene.
Okay, let me get back to the phones, and John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Chief. I got to congratulate you on the restraint you showed. A lot of people consider Black Lives Matter a hate group, and especially they hate the police, it appears, in a lot of cases. So that, to me, that's unbelievable restraint. I just think you acted very properly. My question is, I was not one of the organizers, but I did participate in the Tea Party demonstrations they had maybe 5 years ago. And from my recollection, the organizers of the Tea Party demonstrations had to get permits and got permits for us to march in the streets. Now, does that mean that, let's say, the Tea Party people can now start marching in the streets without permits?
Go ahead, Chief.
Well, I'm not going to buy that term of hate group with Black Lives Matter. And I think this is one of the problems that we have, is that based on someone's beliefs, the views they're expressing, that we tend to put them, try to label them in a group. And so, no, I don't buy on to this idea that Black Lives Matter is a hate group. I believe many people involved in that, you know, have sincere convictions, and they're trying to make this a better community for all of us. First of all, I want to make that point. I'm not going to try to comment on what happened 5 years ago with the Tea Party. I wasn't involved in that. But again, we are in a very, very difficult time here, and I think we've made assessments recently with some of these protests, with actually all the ones that we've been involved in, that we're going to let people march and express their views and create some disruption and obstruction because we think this is a more flexible and a more restrained approach.
Chief, what do you think Black Lives Matter wants?
Well, I don't know if I'm the person to speak to them or speak for them, rather.
Well, I'm curious to know what your interpretation on what you think.
Well, I think many of the people there are sincerely upset about what they see as a relationship between police and the minority community, both nationally and locally. And, what I think they want, I believe most of them want to live in a community, in a society where they feel on a level playing field, and that they're judged as individuals and not by any other classification. And, I think that's what most police officers want. I think most police officers are willing to be judged by their own individual conduct.
Let me get a couple of listeners' questions in regarding the arrest of a couple of reporters. Chief Simonelli addressed that earlier this week. I know you've had more time to work through this. It was 13 WAM reporters Carlette Claire and Justin Carter who were arrested, and several of our listeners are asking, weren't there other white reporters there? Does the chief think those reporters were arrested because they are black?
I absolutely do not think that. We've looked at this very carefully. We had a very, I think, very honest and productive dialogue with the reporters and the management from 13 WAM. We stepped through what happened. There were a number of reasons why it happened, but I have no reason to believe race was one of them. I think that the first point, and I think the most important point, is this. We made no attempts to restrict media access to what was going on. We made a decision that we were going to allow the media, to the extent they weren't creating any obstruction to what
sure.
we were trying
so
to do.
So why did those two get arrested?
Well, we can step through the sequence of events. I think the biggest reason was that they were not readily identifiable as reporters. One of them had no garb on to indicate that he was a reporter. Both of them, the other one did have a yellow polo shirt, which had a 13 WAM logo on it.
And a microphone.
No.
No?
Both of them were filming with their iPhones.
Oh, okay.
And virtually everybody in the crowd was filming with their iPhones. So we, you know, we stepped through this very carefully. We've already had a number of after action meetings and debriefings. So what we are in the process of doing is, you know, we're going to talk to the media. We're going to ask that they be more conspicuously identified. And we're actually working on issuing a standard media credential that will be readily apparent to our officers so that we can try to prevent this from happening again. So, no, I don't believe whatever happened, I don't believe it was because of race.
Were there other white reporters there, Chief?
Well, there were a number of reporters there, yes.
But the only ones who were arrested were black.
Well, again, there was a sequence of events there that led those officers approaching them. Again, I don't think they were identifiable as reporters, you know, to the officers on the scene. What happened was I was watching in the command post as when I saw that they were approached, I recognized them both as reporters. You know, that we immediately communicated with Commander Morabito on the scene, and they were released very quickly. The other thing, too, is you got to bear in mind, this was a very fluid situation. At least one of the reporters did not respond from work, but was actually out for the evening, is my information. And then finding out that this happened, went there and started covering it essentially with his iPhone. So I think these are a number of factors that led up to that happening.
Okay, let me get back to the phones. And Brian in Rochester. This is Brian next. Go ahead.
So I'm a white guy in a mostly affluent suburb of this town, and I don't have any criminal aspirations. But, you know, I feel like the chief of police sets the culture for their department. The chief of police is solely responsible for setting the culture of the activities of all of everybody under their charge. When I was a young man, I went to work for an insurance company, and I ended up in just adjusting insurance claims. And it took me about 15 minutes to figure, after being in a couple of different companies, to figure out that these were companies and this trade was inherently dishonest. And I'm speaking about insurance adjusters in the practice. Now, that's not what we're talking about. But what we're talking about is that you can't spend more than a year or so at an entry level as an insurance adjuster without making a having to ask yourself, is this something that I'm prepared to compromise myself to participate in? For me, the answer was no, and I got out of the industry. I would argue that the same thing applies to police officers. This is no longer about protect and serve. I live in a white community. I don't fear the police. I live in a wealthy neighborhood. I don't fear the police. I don't worry about seeing a police car coming down my street, but there's not a person in America that does not feel, honestly, if they tell you the truth, that the police are at some level the enemy, because people become your constituents. We are nothing but a revenue stream when it comes down to it.
All right, Brian, I got to jump in because we've got more to get to. Chief, if you want to respond to some of that, please.
No, thank you. I'll decline to respond to that.
Okay. There's a couple of people asking if the chief believes there should have been a PIO there, that more information, maybe a little bit more communication would have been a better scenario.
Yes, and that's one of the things we actually, the way this thing developed, we had a operational plan. We actually started demobilizing because we were just going to keep an eye on the people that were staying at Liberty Pole. And one of the things that we've talked about is what we should have done when it reactivated. We kind of scrambled to get back together. One of the things we decided we would do is have someone on the scene that was solely responsible working with the field commander to deal with the media. And I think Commander Morabito can tell you, while he was trying to deal with a lot of the circumstances he talked about, he was also getting approached by reporters. Typically, we would do that, but again, we that's something that we've already discussed, and that in a future situation, we will have someone there that will be focused on the media and trying to deal with that.
Okay.
Yeah, that definitely would have been beneficial on that Friday evening into Saturday morning if I had somebody with me. But quite frankly, with today's reporters and iPhones and access we granted, they were in and amongst us the whole time. So it still made it difficult to kind of differentiate who was who, and unless you know them, you know, unless you personally know who they are, and I did for the most part, except for a couple.
Mike on Twitter says, why are upstate police departments so white compared to the population they serve? Mike, it's not unique to upstate New York, but Chief Simonelli, go ahead.
Well, you know, the diversifying the police department, I think every police department in the country is very concerned about that. We certainly want a police department that reflects the community. You know, I know we probably don't have time to talk a lot about what we do to try to diversify, but if you look at our, you know, our recent hiring, and really for a number of years, the Rochester Police Department makes a very strong effort to recruit a very diverse police department. Our police academy class now, out of 26 recruits, 12 are minorities, and we've been hovering around that level really for the last few years. So, you know, the first and most important thing is to hire good people to be police officers, but we are absolutely committed to having a diverse police department.
Jasper, James, and others asking about what they called protective or riot gear. A lot of people felt it was a provocation. If you missed it earlier, I don't want to speak for the chief, but he essentially said they did not start the night wearing that protective gear, only brought it out in circumstances where they felt it was necessary based on the behavior of protesters, and that he doesn't apologize for making sure the men and women on the street were protected. So, Jasper and James, I you know, that was a common question earlier this hour. I've got about 40 seconds left, Chief. What are you doing next? What's next in the review and moving forward here?
Well, we still got quite a bit of review. And again, if we find anything that happened that causes a concern, either through our review or somebody brings it to our attention, we'll deal with it. But we will learn from this and we will go forward. And, you know, we've built a lot of relationships over the last few years. We're going to rely on those and we're going to try to build more. And I'll say this for anybody that's listening, you know, that to reach out to us, we'll reach out to you. And I would much rather sit down and talk to you and deal with these issues that way rather than a less productive way.
Conversation better than confrontation.
Absolutely.
Chief Michael Simonelli from the Rochester Police Department and Commander Joseph Morabito spending the hour with us answering your questions. Got through a lot. I know there will be more in the coming days. I hope we'll see you back here. And thank you for your accessibility and your willingness to come in and answer any questions our listeners have.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thanks to everyone involved with the program. If you've been watching on Facebook Live, Juan Vasquez, thank you very much, Juan. Our thanks to Megan Mack, the producer of the program. Engineer is Rob. Deprina is the intern. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a good afternoon. We will talk with you on a Friday.